Hello and welcome in to another episode of the Big Ten Blitz. I'm your host, Sean. We are 4 weeks down in this Big Ten football season, and it looks like the battle for the conference is going to be an absolute bloodbath. Michigan just barely squeaked out a home win against USC this past week, despite completing just 7 passes for less than 50 yards on the day. Illinois has really put themselves right at the seat for the Big Ten race with their upset win in Lincoln, Nebraska. And despite that loss, it still looks like the Huskers are going to be competitive throughout this Big Ten football season. Ohio State, their offense is finally starting to click and look like an absolute unit that any defense in the country is going to have a really hard time slowing down. Rutgers picked up a key win in Blacksburg over Virginia Tech as a road underdog. Almost blew it there at the end despite dominating the game, but Rutgers is here and has a real chance at 10 wins this season, and obviously can't forget about Penn State or Oregon either. Really, the Big Ten is looking as deep as it has in a long time, and I don't think they have as many maybe national title contenders as the SEC does with Alabama and Georgia and Ole Miss and Tennessee the way those teams have looked, but I think top to bottom, the Big Ten is the deepest conference in college football. I think the Big Ten has 9 teams that are worthy being ranked in the top 25, and that's excluding Iowa, who, even though they have an anemic passing attack again, Caleb Johnson looks like they're going to have themselves as real players throughout the Big Ten this season. A lot of depth in the Big Ten so far this season, and it's been a really fantastic first 4 weeks of the season, and cannot wait to see how it continues to shake out the rest of the season. For today's episode, I wanted to look back a little bit on kind of my preseason expectations for the Big Ten and go position by position and evaluate who have been the biggest surprises in the Big Ten based off of what the preseason expectations were and who have been the biggest disappointments. I think the good thing for the Big Ten is that there have been far more pleasant surprises, especially on the offensive side of the ball, and there have been disappointments so far this year. Despite that, there are players who I was expecting some big things from this year who really have not stepped up to the plate. It's not too late for them to flip the script on the season, but that's going to be our episode today, going position by position, breaking down the biggest surprises and biggest disappointments so far in this 2024 Big Ten football season. We'll start on the offensive side of the football with the most important position on the field, and that's quarterback. I think I've been vocal about how much the quarterback position has improved throughout the Big Ten, really since week one. I think that's the biggest reason why the Big Ten has taken a step forward this year and is so incredibly deep, is that there are so many teams across the Big Ten who have good to great to maybe even elite quarterback play. And that's really the first time that we can say that for the Big Ten as a whole in a really long time. That being said, I did expect a lot of improvement at the quarterback position across the Big Ten. I did expect a lot of these players to take big steps forward this year. And a lot of the quarterbacks that we're seeing have hot starts, like Dylan Gabriel, Will Rogers, Dylan Raiola, Luke Altmyer, Drew Aller, Will Howard. A lot of these guys, I was expecting to take big steps forward coming into the season, so their success really hasn't been a surprise in my eyes. But 3 quarterbacks have really surpassed my expectations from the preseason. The first one is Curtis Rourke, quarterback for Indiana. And listen, he was a former MAC Offensive Player of the Year. He has loads of experience. I knew coming into the season that he would provide them with much better, more consistent quarterback play than they've gotten since Michael Penix was there. But the way Curtis Rourke has taken over the reins for this offense and made this a truly elite unit, I don't think even the most optimistic Indiana fans saw coming into this season. He's averaging 11 yards an attempt. He's thrown 8 touchdowns, hasn't turned the ball over yet. He's completing 76% of his passes, and he's averaging over 250 yards a game in what's really been a balanced offense. His sharp decision-making and his ability to get the ball out quickly isn't really what's a surprise to me. It's how accurate he's been. He's been deadly accurate within 15 yards of the line of scrimmage, and it seems every week that goes by, he gets more confidence with that deep ball and seems more capable of really stretching defenses. Granted, it's been against one of the weakest schedules in all of college football, but Curtis Rourke has been nothing short of magnificent for the Hoosiers so far. It's really been a surprise. My other big surprise is Rutgers starting quarterback Ethan Kaliakmanis. Coming into the season, I think I had him rated as the second-to-worst quarterback in the Big Ten, mainly because the only thing I could base him off of is what we saw last year at Minnesota, and that entire offense was just a complete disaster. But he got reunited with his former offensive coordinator, Kurt Ciarrocca, at Rutgers. Something that the NFL has really shown us this year is how important quality coaching and quality play calling can be for a quarterback success. And I think that is just as true at the college level as well. I think getting out of Minnesota and getting a change of scenery with Greg Schiano and Kirk Ciarrocca at Rutgers has been magnificent for Ethan Calicmanis. Listen, he hasn't been elite by any means. He hasn't really lit up scoreboards. But in order to understand how valuable Ethan Calicmanis has been to this offense, you also have to understand how horrible Rutgers quarterback play has been for the better part of the past decade. Just last year, Rutgers quarterbacks completed 48% of their passes on the season for 6 yards an attempt, 10 touchdowns the entire season with 8 interceptions, and they averaged less than 150 yards passing per game. In steps Ethan Calicmanis, and through 4 games, he's completing 63% of his passes, 9 yards an attempt, already has 6 touchdowns to just 1 interception, and he's averaging 215 yards a game. The biggest thing he's doing is not losing Rutgers games. His decision-making has been crisp, he has been consistently accurate, and really he's been just good enough to be able to really set up play action, which is helping this offense expand in ways that we did not see last season. He's got a strong arm, he's a lot more accurate than he was last year, and he can run around in the pocket and even up the field if he needs it to. His legs have been a factor so far this season. And I really like what I've seen from him. He might be the biggest reason why Rutgers, like I said at the beginning, has a legitimate shot at 10 wins. He's been a very pleasant surprise. And then my third quarterback who has really surprised me is Billy Edwards out of Maryland. He's been the primary backup for Talia Tungavaiola over the past couple seasons, but in those opportunities he's had in either small packages when he stepped in for a few plays for injury or the handful of games he started over the past couple seasons, he didn't strike me as a pocket passer. He always struck me as a run-first guy, a guy who's going to use his size and his strength to run over guys and wear them down. In fact, I wasn't even sure that he was going to be able to beat NC State transfer MJ Morris for the starting job coming into this season, but he did, and he has run away with it. I mean, there hasn't been a quarterback controversy in College Park since the first snap of the season because Billy Edwards has taken a hold of this offense. He's leading the conference in completions and attempts and yards. He's completing 75% of his passes, has thrown 8 touchdowns against just 2 interceptions, averaging almost 9 yards an attempt. He's continued to be a threat with his legs, already rushing for a couple touchdowns and helping to evade sacks for an offensive line that, as we expected coming into the season, has been a little bit inconsistent. But Billy Edwards has been good enough behind center to mitigate those concerns that they've had up front. Has really stepped up at quarterback for Maryland. I've been really impressed with what I've seen so far. With so many quarterbacks taking steps forward this season and with improved quarterback play really around the conference as a whole, there aren't too many guys that I can say I've been disappointed in. But one guy I can say without a doubt I've been disappointed now how he hasn't stepped up this season is Purdue's quarterback Hudson Card. And listen, I'm not going to blame all of Purdue's struggles these past couple weeks against Notre Dame and against Oregon State on Hudson Card. I think a lot of it goes to Graham Harrell. I had concerns about coming into the season as a play caller, and he has just continued to prove to me that he is not able to really get this offense into a rhythm, and he doesn't really know how to balance the run and the pass as a play caller very well. That's been the biggest reason, and the struggles up front, why Purdue's offense has really sputtered these past couple weeks. It also doesn't really help Hudson Card that he has probably the weakest ensemble of pass catchers in the Big Ten. Max Clair has been reliable at tight end, but outside of that, they have a lot of inexperience. They've dealt with a lot of injuries. They have some raw athletes on the outside, but not a true bona fide wide receiver one. Jamal Edrian and Denylan Morissette have been their top 2 wide receivers, and they've combined through 3 games for just 10 catches for 114 yards. So it's no question that Hudson Card isn't putting up mind-boggling numbers in the box score, but he's completed less than 50% of his passes in each of the past 2 games. Notre Dame can be forgivable because they were just outclassed along both lines of scrimmage from the get-go. They never really had a chance. But Oregon State, with the rebuild that they're going through, with Arthur Smith leaving, is by no means an elite defensive matchup. And Hudson Card was held to 7 of 17 passing. He's already thrown 3 interceptions on the year, averaging less than 7 yards an attempt, which is a step back from where he was last year. And listen, like I said before, there are so many quarterbacks throughout the Big Ten who have taken big steps forward in their development and maturation as a quarterback. And that's why we've seen so many offenses take step forwards this year. And Hudson Card, I'm not going to give up on him. I still think he has a lot of raw talent, but he just hasn't taking that step forward to help this offense stay above water because they have a lot of problems in other places, but Hudson Card isn't really being the solution either. So I've definitely been disappointed with his performance so far this season, but we're getting into Big Ten season. It can be a hard reset for Purdue, maybe he can pull out some magic. Then we can move on to running back. And listen, it's no surprise guys like Travion Henderson, Quinshon Judkins, and Nick Singleton, Jordan James, are putting up some great numbers across the country. There are two running backs in particular that I have been blown away with, whose production has far exceeded what I expected coming into the season. The first one is the nation's leading rusher, Iowa's Caleb Johnson. It's no surprise that he's dominating the backfield and really being the focal point of this offense. When healthy, he's been their number one running back over the past two seasons, rushing for almost 1,500 yards. But coming into the season with new offensive coordinator Phil Lester, I did think this was going to be a little bit more of a running back by committee with he, Jazzy Peterson, and LaShawn Williams. But Caleb Johnson looks like a brand new running back and a much better athlete than we've seen the past two seasons. That's not to say he wasn't a good running back before, but he is running like the best running back in college football. His combination of patience, strength, and then speed at the second level honestly reminds me of Le'Veon Bell a little bit when he was at Michigan State. He isn't quite the pass catcher Le'Veon Bell was, but Caleb Johnson knows where the hole will be. He has no problem waiting for it. He has the strength to just stiff arm defensive linemen or linebacker, and he has the speed to outrun just about anyone on the field. He has been the best running back in college football so far this season. Nation's leading rusher, averaging 171 yards per game. That's despite missing the entire first half of the season opener due to suspension. He has 9 rushing touchdowns, averaging 8.5 yards a carry. He has been dominant, one of the most pleasant surprises of the Big Ten season so far. And another running back I've been really surprised with stepping up like this is Kalel Mullings from Michigan. He has essentially dethroned Donovan Edwards as their starting running back and is now their true bell cow. This is his 5th season. He came into Michigan as a really underrated recruit as a linebacker, didn't see the field much outside of special teams, made the switch to running back last year, and is now the best running back on their roster. He was Michigan's entire offense against USC and really put that offense on his back to get them the win. He's averaging 107 rushing yards per game. He has 4 touchdowns, averaging over 8 yards a carry. And those numbers should only go up as he continues to dominate this backfield, with Donovan Edwards being a shell of his former self. Kalel Mullings, it looks like one of the best running backs in the Big Ten, an absolute gem for Michigan, something they desperately need considering the lack of production everywhere else on this offense. If it wasn't for Kalel Mullings, Michigan would already have 2 losses just 4 weeks into the season. He won them that game and I think won the hearts of everyone in Ann Arbor, really performing so far this September. And even though a lot of quarterbacks have stepped up this year, the Big Ten is still a league of running the football, still home to the best collection of running backs in the entire country. So there aren't a lot of disappointments so far, but one running back who I had sky-high expectations for coming into the season who just hasn't met them yet is Minnesota running back Darius Taylor. It doesn't help that he was banged up coming into the season. He had an injury late in fall camp that cost him the opener against UNC, and he still hasn't looked 100% healthy. He had an 80-yard rushing touchdown against Nevada, but even on that, he did not look like he had the same speed he had last year. And if you take out that 180-yard rush he had against Nevada, which I generally hate playing that game of, oh, these are the stats if you take out their biggest plays. But in this case, if you take out that one run, he's averaging exactly 4 yards a carry this season. And that's not the Darius Taylor that I remember from last year, who was averaging like 150 yards a game when healthy at 6 yards a carry and was really the focal point of Minnesota's offense. This season so far, averaging only 70 yards rushing per game. And it's not so much on him. Minnesota's offense as a whole has been really disappointing. It's hard to run the ball when you have virtually no legitimate passing attack, which is Minnesota's case with quarterback Max Brosmer. But I really thought that Darius Taylor was the kind of talent at running back that can produce no matter what, kind of what we're seeing with Caleb Johnson at Iowa. Their passing game is just as anemic as Minnesota's, but Caleb Johnson is finding ways to get to the second level and to be productive in this offense, and Darius Taylor just hasn't so far. It's mainly disappointment with Minnesota's offense as a whole and their play calling and their play along the line of scrimmage and Max Brosmer, but the fact that Darius Taylor really has not been able to do much of anything in this offense is still disappointing because I held him in such high regard heading into this season. And moving on to wide receiver, again, with improved quarterback play, you're going to see more and more wide receivers step up, and there are 4 who have really surprised me so far this season. The first off is Jeremiah Smith for Ohio State. I guess I shouldn't be this surprised considering he is one of the highest rated recruits of all time, an athletic freak who was getting praise from Ohio State staff and players from the minute he stepped onto campus. But I thought coming into this season, he's 18 years old, he's a true freshman, Ohio State's wide receiver room is stacked, he's going to make an impact, but maybe not till in the middle or later in the season. And even so, he's not going to be Ohio State's wide receiver one from the start of the season. I thought he was going to have to ease into playing in the Big Ten a little bit more, but I've been very wrong. He has easily been Ohio State's most productive and explosive wide receiver, already has 14 catches for 281 yards and 4 touchdowns. That's over 20 yards a catch. He looks as close to an indefendable wide receiver as you can get at the college level. It's hard not to get excited about what he can do this season and throughout his Ohio State career. Jeremiah Smith looks like the next in a long line of elite Ohio State wide receivers. But he's not the only true freshman wide receiver in the Big Ten that is turning heads. Michigan State has one in Nick Marsh. He really shined in the spring game, and I thought that there was a chance by the end of the season that he could work his way up to be Michigan State's wide receiver one, especially because this is a team that was really lacking experience outside of Montori Foster. But Nick Marsh seems to have, similar to Jeremiah Smith, just stepped right into the wide receiver one role for Michigan State from the get-go. He has 11 catches for 232 yards and a touchdown. Again, over 20 yards a catch. And he really was the biggest reason why Michigan State was able to beat Maryland on the road a couple weeks ago. Really impressed with what I've seen from him. He and Jeremiah Smith both have really promising careers in the Big Ten over the next few seasons. My third surprise at wide receiver is Ty Felton for Maryland. And listen, I had high expectations coming into the season for him. He was on my second team preseason All-Big Ten, so I had high expectations for him coming into the season, but I didn't expect him to be putting up better numbers than almost anyone else in the country. He has been easily Billy Edwards' top target and really shouldered this passing attack. He has 41 catches through 4 games for over 600 yards and 5 touchdowns. He is averaging over 10 catches and 150 yards a game, and with that volume still averaging over 15 yards a catch is really impressive. He is a complete receiver. He's a good enough athlete to rack up yards after the catch. He's a really crisp route runner and has a complete route tree, but he also, despite his smaller stature, is great at high pointing the ball and winning one-on-one battles and coming down with jump balls. There really isn't anything he can't do at the wide receiver position. It's the reason why he's the Big Ten's leader in almost every receiving category so far this season, and I can't wait to see what he can do the rest of the way. And my final surprise at wide receiver has been Nebraska wide receiver Isaiah Nair. I know his biggest highlight so far this season was probably getting the ball ripped away by Illinois cornerback Torrey Cox in their loss this past weekend, but he has stepped up as Nebraska's wide receiver one, which was a position I had a lot of question marks surrounding Nebraska coming into the season. There was certainly a question mark at who Dylan Raiola's top target would be, and even if he is everything that Nebraska fans hope he can be, does he have enough pass catchers around him to set him up for success? And Isaiah Nair by himself has put those concerns to rest. He has 16 catches for almost 300 yards and 4 touchdowns. Again, he can be a security blanket close to the line of scrimmage if he needs, but he really excels downfield and has been able to take the tops off of defenses. He is going to be key to Nebraska staying in the Big Ten race throughout this season. But there have been two wide receivers who I had pretty high expectations for coming into the season who just have not met them. Simple as that. The first is Cal transfer Jeremiah Hunter, who went to Washington. He is a phenomenal athlete who really excels at high pointing the ball and winning one-on-one battles and stretching the defense and winning those jump balls deep downfield. And I thought he was going to give that dimension to this Washington offense, and he just hasn't so far. Other guys have stepped up for the Huskies, luckily, but Jeremiah Hunter, through 4 games, has only 10 catches for 130 yards and a touchdown. He excels at being a deep threat and taking tops off of defenses, but he's averaging only 13 yards a catch in this offense. So this very well may be a scheme issue. They might not be utilizing him properly, but either way, Jeremiah Hunter so far has been a huge disappointment compared to where I was expecting him to be. Another wide receiver disappointment has been Caleb Brown for Iowa. Listen, it's hard to have high expectations for Iowa receivers given their passing game over the past few years and given how they've looked this year throwing the football, but I thought Caleb Brown was going to have a real opportunity to be the reason why this becomes a competent passing game. He was easily their top receiver in the back half of their schedule last year. He's a phenomenal athlete, and he's the kind of guy who can just line up in the slot try to get the ball to his hands and he can make something happen after the catch. And I thought Phil Lester was going to try to find creative ways to get him the football. And I thought it was going to be fun watching Caleb Brown play this year. But he was suspended in the opener for a DWI incident he had in July. And he just really has not been able to get on the field very much at all. And really has been an afterthought in this offense so far. He has only one catch on the season. Phil Lester actually was asked about it this week in his press conference. And he said that Caleb Brown has to work on his timing coming out of routes. And then he can get on the field a little bit more. But it's just been really nothing but disappointment from Caleb Brown so far this season, being an afterthought in another anemic Iowa passing attack. And it's hard to see the light at the end of the tunnel for him, at least this season. I think he's easily been the biggest disappointment on the offensive side of the football in the Big Ten so far this season. Moving on to the tight end position, my biggest surprise has been Tyler Warren out of Penn State. And listen, he's another guy I had in my preseason All-Big Ten teams. With Theo Johnson heading off to the NFL, Tyler Warren was really owning the tight end room for Penn State. And with Andy Kotelnicki coming in, I knew that he would find ways to get Tyler Warren the football. Knew he would have a career year this year, but I didn't think that he would be Penn State's top receiving option. He already has 16 catches for 226 yards and 2 touchdowns, pacing the Nittany Lions in all 3 categories. And he hasn't just been that kind of close to the line of scrimmage security blanket for Drew Aller. He's been able to push the ball downfield, especially off of play action. He has been an absolute killer in the seam, and he's been really hard to defend. Andy Kotelnicki, it seems like he's running the same play call where it's a play action seam shot to Tyler Warren. Seems like he's running that 2 or 3 times a game, and no one's figured out how to stop it yet. Tyler Warren might be the best tight end in the conference this year, and is one of the best, most consistent pass catchers we've seen in the early part of the season. But a tight end that's disappointed me so far this season has been Thomas Fidone out of Nebraska. And I think that's just indicative of his entire career for the Huskers so far. Coming in as, you know, a top 100 prospect in 2021, battling injuries for the majority of his career, finally deemed healthy this year. And everyone thought that he was going to be a big time part of this offense, thought that he was going to be Dylan Raiola's safety net, thought he could also be a real game changer in run blocking. And help open up this offense, being a player that just never comes off this field. But, you know, so far this season, Thomas Fidone has just been okay. He has 8 catches for 73 yards, hasn't caught a touchdown yet, hasn't been a huge game changer in the blocking game. It doesn't quite seem like that he has really developed as a football player, and he is still very much a raw athlete that Nebraska doesn't quite know what to do with. And then along the offensive line, one offensive line unit that's really impressed me so far this season, at least compared to where I thought they would be coming into the season, was Washington. I was really worried about this offensive line. Needing to start 3 or more true or redshirt freshmen usually isn't a recipe for success in the Big Ten, but so far they have been, at the very least, a competent offensive line. They're averaging 5 yards a carry on the ground. They've allowed only 7 sacks in 4 games, which is certainly more than you'd ideally like to have. But considering they've already played Washington State and Northwestern, this offensive line has been tested, and they've been able to get Will Rogers enough time for him to be able to push the ball downfield and not be a turnover machine. So Washington, a lot of young guys on that offensive line, and a lot of these guys have stepped up, which I think is huge as you project this Washington football program forward beyond 2024. Because listen, I think even the most optimistic Husky fans knew that their ceiling this year is probably 7, maybe 8 wins. And they seem on track for that. It's going to be a battle for them to get to the postseason. But bringing in Jed Fish, this wasn't about reclaiming 2024 and getting to the playoff this year. This is about establishing a baseline and setting up this program to have success down the road in 2025 and beyond. And with the way that their offensive line has played this year, I have a lot of confidence in the direction of this offense and Washington's chances to be a college football playoff contender sooner rather than later under Jed Fish. They still have plenty of room to grow, but been really impressed what I've seen out of Washington's young, inexperienced offensive line so far. But an offensive line that has not met the billing whatsoever so far this season has been Wisconsin's. I mean, listen, they underperformed last year, but they brought back really the majority of their offensive line. Jack Nelson, this time 2 years ago, was supposed to be a first-round draft pick. Jake Renfro, former All-American center who's been hurt the majority of the past couple seasons, he finally came back. It looked like they had enough experience and enough size for this to look like a Wisconsin offensive line of old. And it just hasn't happened so far. All of these guys, all of these veterans that have been mainstays on the Wisconsin offensive line for years, just don't appear to really be improving or developing. Ches Malusi, who is their running back one, is averaging 4.3 yards a carry. Tawei Walker, who was their marquee pickup in the transfer portal from Oklahoma, he's averaging 3.5 yards a carry. The quarterbacks have been getting pressured consistently, and this was before they got beaten up by Alabama at home. This was an issue before that game. It was evident from the very first game that this offensive line had not taken a step forward from last year. And being from Wisconsin and having offensive linemen and dominance along the line of scrimmage in your DNA, and this is the unit you trot out for the second straight season under a guy like Luke Fickell, I think is really disappointing compared to where I thought this unit could be coming into the season. Switching things up to the defensive side of the football, along the defensive line, there have been two guys who are on pace to have all Big Ten, maybe even all American seasons that I didn't quite see. The first is Josiah Stewart from Michigan. He was their big transfer portal pickup from Coastal Carolina last year, and he had a great season for them last year. But Michigan's strength as a defense last year was the depth that they had at defensive end. They were rotating consistently 5 or 6 guys every single game, with all of them getting relatively even snaps. So it was hard to tell if Josiah Stewart was actually a polished, elite defensive end, or if he was just able to stay fresh the entire game and, you know, was playing along two of the best defensive tackles in all of college football. It's hard to get a read coming into the season exactly how good Josiah Stewart was as a pass rusher. But he has answered the bell so far this season. He has been virtually unblockable, might be one of the best defensive ends in all of college football. He already has 4 sacks, 7 TFLs, and a forced fumble, and he was everywhere this past weekend against USC. If you watched that game, it was hard to watch more than a play for when USC was on offense without hearing Mason Graham's or Josiah Stewart's name called. It's not a huge surprise to me that he's leading this team in sacks right now, but the way he seems to have developed technically as a pass rusher and the arsenal moves that he has put on display so far this season, I mean, he looks like a first-round draft pick. And it is a very real possibility that this Michigan defensive line is going to produce 3 first rounders in this upcoming draft. And that's the kind of talent they have. And Josiah Stewart, the way that he has improved this season, has been nothing short of remarkable. The other defensive lineman I've been really impressed with has been Chris Bogle at Michigan State. He has been, you know, been in college for a long time, been around East Lansing for a long time, but he really seems to have taken another step forward as more than just a big body on the defensive line. He has 3 sacks already and 5 TFLs, and is one of the biggest reasons why Michigan State's defense has made such a drastic 180 compared to last year. They are fierce up front. They are hard to block. They are sure tackling. A lot of it has to do with how Chris Bogle is playing on that defensive line. But a couple disappointments from the defensive line. First and foremost has to be JT Tuimoloau from Ohio State. I think a lot of Ohio State fans so far are a little underwhelmed with what they've seen out of the defensive line so far this season. And Ryan Day touched on it this week in a press conference. You have to keep in mind that sacks have just as much to do with the offense as it does have to do with the defense. If an offense decides that they want to run RPOs and get the ball out in less than 2 seconds every single time and they're just not going to take sacks, that's something that they can do. You can't control it if the quarterback is getting the ball out of their hands in 2 seconds. And if they're able to successfully do that, you're not going to be able to pile up a lot of sacks. And that's why Ohio State hasn't piled up a ton of sacks so far this season. You know, that being said, though, Jack Sawyer, who's playing opposite JT Tuimoloau, his name is called several times a game. He is getting after quarterbacks. He only has 1 sack, I think, so far, but he has been harassing quarterbacks. He's been getting hits on him, and he has been consistently hurrying quarterbacks and forcing them to get the ball out of their hands quicker than they want to. JT Tuimoloau isn't doing that. He has 1 sack on the season, but you haven't really heard his name called much at all in the first 3 games. He isn't winning one-on-one battles, and he isn't getting after the quarterback, even rushing them. So I'm not really that concerned about Ohio State's defense as a whole. Their defensive line, I still think, is one of the best units in the country. I think the fact that Caden Curry has stepped up for them is really key. But JT Tuimoloau, as an individual player, I just think has not really lived up to his billing as a player since he arrived at Ohio State. He had that 1 game against Penn State 2 years ago now, and outside of that, he just has been a disappointment for Ohio State. And even coming back for a senior year, it doesn't quite look like that he's taken a huge step in his development. so I've been disappointed in JT Tuimoloau's performance so far this season. Another disappointing performance along the defensive line has been Bear Alexander for USC. I thought he was their linchpin up front and was going to be the reason why this USC defense turns things around this season. And they certainly have. They're certainly a much more competent unit on that side of the football than they were last year. But it does not have a lot to do with Bear Alexander. He has 4 tackles this season, 0 plays behind the line of scrimmage, hasn't gotten his hand on the football. And yeah, I get it. His job is to eat up blocks. So just only having 4 tackles doesn't necessarily mean he's not doing his job. But again, you have not heard Bear Alexander's name once this season. Michigan dominated them up front, and none of Michigan's offensive linemen had to double a USC defensive lineman. That included Bear Alexander, who's the biggest guy they have up front. He is their best playmaker heading into the season along that defensive front, and he just really isn't doing much. And the fact that he isn't eating up blocks, the fact that he isn't getting into the backfield, has a big reason why Michigan was able to run the ball for over 300 yards on him. You know, if USC wants to contend in the Big Ten this year, they're going to have to stop the run, and it all starts up front with Bear Alexander. He's got to step up if USC wants a chance at getting to the Big Ten title game. And from what we've seen so far this season, it doesn't look like it's going to happen. They're going to have to try to get that defensive line presence from somewhere else. And moving back a level to linebacker, there have been 3 real surprises from the linebacker room. And we'll actually stick with USC's defense for this one. Eric Gentry. He transferred from Arizona State as a blue chip prospect a few years ago, and has had a few eyebrow-raising plays for USC over the years, but never really found a home in Alex Grinch's defense. Was a really great athlete. You could always tell that by watching him, but was never really a game changer. But with Danton Lynn, he has found his home, and he plays only about 50% of the snaps for USC on defense, but when he's on the field, you can feel his presence because he's able to line up virtually anywhere for this defense. He already has 26 tackles, which includes 18 solo tackles, which is first in the Big Ten. He has 7 tackles for loss. He has 2 sacks. He has a pass breakup, a forced fumble, and a fumble recovery. He's been everywhere, and he has easily been USC's defensive MVP so far this season. And I think one of the most improved defenders we've seen in all of college football so far. Love what I'm seeing out of Eric Gentry. Another linebacker I've loved what I've seen out of so far this season has been Aiden Fisher for Indiana. He came over from JMU, and he was first team all-conference for JMU and multi-year starter there. He was going to have an impact on this defense, and it was evident throughout fall camp that he was becoming the leader for this unit and was going to be very key in whether or not Indiana was going to have a successful defense this year. But I did not expect him to be arguably one of the top linebackers in all of college football through the first few weeks. He already has 38 tackles. He has 2.5 TFLs and a sack. He is the play caller for this Indiana defense. He tells everyone where their assignments are. Everyone looks to him pre-snap, and he is the number one reason why Indiana has a top 10 scoring defense so far this season. One other linebacker I've really loved, we'll go back to Michigan State's defense, who has really improved so far this year, Jordan Turner. He transferred in from Wisconsin after spending 3 seasons there. And he had a couple nice seasons, combining for almost 130 total tackles, 12 TFLs, and 5 sacks across 2 seasons. But I wasn't exactly sure how he would fit into this new-look defense. He plays linebacker and can make great tackles in space, but he can be a liability in pass coverage and generally likes to play close to the line of scrimmage. I wasn't sure how this would work out for Michigan State defense, who had a decent amount of depth up front. But he has really become, along with Chris Bogle, the leader of this defense, has 22 tackles so far, 6 TFLs, and 3 sacks. And he hasn't been a liability anywhere. And like I said, Michigan State, the biggest difference between this year and last year is how great they are at tackling in space and how hard they are to block up front. And that is everything to do with Jordan Turner and Chris Bogle, who I talked about before. You thought coming into this season that Michigan State might be beating teams predominantly with offense, but it's really been their defense that has kept them in games and is why they're 3-1 right now. There is one linebacker who I've been disappointed in so far this season, and there's plenty of time for him to turn things around, but Jayshon Barham, I thought he was going to be a game wrecker for Michigan. He was a freshman All-American a couple years ago at Maryland, battled injuries last year, but comes in and is a physical freak. He runs probably a sub-4.4 40, and I think he's one of the hardest hitters in the Big Ten. I thought he was going to be a super versatile guy in this Michigan defense, someone that can rush the passer just as well as they can drop back into coverage and take out running backs in the middle of the field. And he's been reliable for them so far. I don't think he's had any missed assignments that's led to big plays for Michigan, which is, you know, a good sign. But he also hasn't been a game changer, hasn't come up with very many big plays for this Michigan defense, and I thought that was going to be his calling card. He has 18 tackles through four games, which is nice, but has no plays behind the line of scrimmage, hasn't been asked to drop back into coverage very much, and Jayshon Barham has just seemed timid on the defensive side of the ball. He could certainly blossom throughout the season and have a really strong November when Michigan will really need him most, but through the first 4 weeks of the season, I've been disappointed with what I've seen out of Jayshon Barham so far. I really thought he was going to end up being one of the best linebackers in the conference. And then we can move to the secondary, finally. Biggest surprise has to be Xavier Scott for Illinois. This was an Illinois pass defense that really struggled last year, was one of the worst in all of the Big Ten, but Xavier Scott has really developed into a certified lockdown cornerback. And I think he's developed a lot like Denzel Burke has for Ohio State. When Denzel Burke was a true freshman, he got on the field a lot, got his hand on a lot of passes, but also committed a lot of penalties, and then really cleaned up his technique and has become Ohio State's lockdown cornerback. And it's been a very similar story with Xavier Scott. Last year, he led the Big Ten with 11 passes defended, but he also got called for a lot of penalties. This season so far, I don't think he's been called for a single penalty. He has 3 interceptions in 4 games. He has 2 TFLs, a sack, and 2 pass breakups. He's been the biggest reason why Illinois has already forced 10 turnovers and is back to being the ball-hawking defense that we saw a couple years ago from that defense that produced Devin Witherspoon and Sidney Brown. Illinois' defense has been one of these stories of the year so far in the Big Ten, and a lot of it has to do with Xavier Scott, who might be the best defensive back, you know, outside of Will Johnson in the Big Ten. There's one defensive back who I've been really disappointed in, and that's Cam Miller for Penn State. I thought Cam Miller was going to be the next lockdown cornerback for Penn State, following in Kalen King's shoes, who followed in Joey Porter's shoes. Cam Miller was a top 200 prospect only a couple years ago and shined in limited opportunities last season and was expected to be Penn State's number one cornerback. And he still is to some degree, but he hasn't shown anything yet that makes me think that he is an all Big Ten caliber corner. He has 9 tackles on the season, doesn't have an interception, doesn't have a pass breakup, been called for a couple of penalties. I remember that he was responsible for some of the big plays that Penn State gave up to Bowling Green a couple weeks ago. And now Kevin Winston, who's been a veteran in Penn State's safety room, goes down with what's been called a long-term injury. And now even more pressure is on Cam Miller. He's getting moved to nickel in the wake of that injury. And this weekend against Illinois is going to be the first time that Cam Miller and this defense without Kevin Winston is really tested. Penn State coming into the season had a pretty thin secondary, and the fact that Cam Miller hasn't yet developed into that all Big Ten caliber corner, that guy that you can put on a wide receiver and know that he's not going to make any big plays on you, the fact that he hasn't stepped up to be that player for Penn State is, I think, ultimately going to be their Achilles heel as they play out this season. If Cam Miller doesn't develop and improve quickly, then Penn State could still get to the college football playoff, but it could be a very quick exit for them. But that'll do it for this episode of the Big Ten Blitz. Had a lot of fun going through these surprises and disappointments so far this season, something that we can reevaluate again at the end of the season. Hope you enjoyed this episode and hope you get to enjoy yet another great weekend of college football across the country, not just in the Big Ten. Make sure you check out our website for our weekly Big Ten betting guide, where we give you the best picks across the Big Ten and across college football. I post my weekly Big Ten recap there as well. And also check us out on Twitter at The Floor Slap, where we try to stay very active for you. Thank you for listening to the Big Ten Blitz. I've been your host, Sean, and I'll be sure to catch you here next week. Thanks.